Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 6th of November, 2020, and we still do not have a declared president of the United States. We have the last remaining votes coming in. It is clear that when the tallies are done, that Biden will go over the top, might even take Georgia. There's 14,000 votes remaining there, where his lead is, Trump's lead has shrunk all the way down to below 1,800 votes. And Pennsylvania, those mail-in votes being counted are leaning Democratic and are very almost certain to send him over the top there. And just Pennsylvania alone will pretty much take care of the maths otherwise. But the question is whether Trump is willing to concede and win. I think I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the day today, business day today in the US, we have sufficient evidence for Biden to come out and declare himself the winner. And you are seeing a little bit of pushback from fellow Republicans pushing back against some of the things Trump is saying, his accusations of fraud and that the votes are being fraudulently counted or created or dropped or whatever the terminology is. But if we look at the market, not seeing a whole lot of uncertainty priced in here, and that's been the real shock here since the election, the vertical rally in risk. We discussed it yesterday in terms of a lifting of volatility hedges. I think that's a very valid point for the initial few days here. So it's clear that if the market was way over anticipating that this might mean the end of the world, and the end of the world didn't happen. Corporate taxes aren't going to go anywhere with the Republican blocking majority in the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. The lifting of those hedges means you lift your linked hedges in the market, which were universally for risk of downside. So those are all lifted. Where do we go from here? I think that'll be our theme today, and something like what our Chief Investment Officer Steen Jakobsen said in the morning call, that the if this continues, then we have to develop a narrative around why it's continuing. And that narrative would be something like bad is good. So the worst things are, in terms of the prospects for the real economy, COVID lockdowns, et cetera, it just means more and more cash splashes on the economy, more and more liquidity provision from central banks. And that's what we're seeing across the board, isn't it, Peter? I mean, it's just a liquidity trade. Everything is bloody up. We have high yield bonds up. We have Bitcoin exploding higher. We have gold up. We have stocks up crazy. What's your take? That's a big mouthful there for me to start off the podcast with. But what's your take on that and what you're seeing in the market?
Well, I think it's a we talked about it that after the election, all these tail risk hedges definitely have come off. The VIX curve have moved considerably down. A lot of uncertainty is being priced out, and as you said, I wrote about it yesterday on analysis.saxo. It's the no policy uncertainty trade antenna that is back into the game, as you said. I mean, the current setup that we're looking at with Biden in the White House and a Republican controlled Senate, it's just lovely for the equity market in the sense that it will not provide any healthcare reform, so all the healthcare companies can operate under this, under the, the same policy framework they had before. That's very good for profitability. The major technology companies, the duopolies and monopolies, will not be taxed at a higher level because unless the Republicans in the Senate change their view over the next couple of years, but I don't think that's going to happen. So we'll have the low corporate tax rates that we've had now for 3 years, and that's very positive for the biggest stocks in the S&P 500. That's why we're seeing the rally. And then with the Powell's speech yesterday and whatever we're seeing in the credit market, we see that on slide five. We're seeing a new low in global corporate aggregate credit, the yield to worst, as you can see on the insert to the right-hand side. I mean, it's a new record. And we know in a low interest rate environment that there's a very close link between the yield in the credit market and what investors are willing to pay for free cash flow in the equity market. And that's the insert on the left-hand side on slide five, where you can see the difference between the free cash flow yield in the Nasdaq 100 and the global credit yield to worst. And we're not at the peak. And I did this mental calculation that in a blowout scenario, if they keep pushing on this string, and we go back to something like a spread of only one or a little bit more than 1% to the credit market, then I know this sounds pretty outrageous, but then Nasdaq could be up 50% from here. And that's my main point before I close on this topic, is that when you are in such a low interest rate environment and you push down the credit yields to these, it's only 1.4% now, you supercharge the equity market. It becomes extremely sensitive to the slightest change in interest rates. And that, I think, for the next year or two will be fantastic for equity markets in terms of upside potential. But then when the inflation hits the economy, then the real danger arrives for equities, because it will have such a super sensitive equity valuation and price formation to the changes in interest rates. And that's the scary point, but that's not where we are right now.
No, and I'll ask you about gold in a moment, Ole, but just to emphasize your point on high yield, and just as importantly, if not more so, the long end of the US yield curve and what happened. I've got that on slide three, where you see that incredible reversal in the US 30-year yield on the left. It just about touched that 1.75% yield, which was the high from back in June, and it was crushed some 25 basis points lower almost by the close yesterday. So that's a huge relief, again, on your valuation multiples argument. And then on the everything is up trade, this is a big explosion, bad is good. We have Bitcoin supercharged the rally here. Look at slide two, or pull up your Bitcoin chart, and you can see how that this election week here has taken out that key high from back in June or July, whenever it was, on that, that 13,000 to 800 or so spike. And now we're trading closer to 16,000. And the all-time high, if you recall, is under 20,000, at least on that chart here from Bloomberg. Ola, we saw a pretty chunky move in gold, but it didn't... Well, it's pretty considerable. I mean, it's maybe more modest in percentage terms than you might have expected, given some of the other things that are unfolding. But it's pretty big, and silver is following suit.
That's right, John. And it really is your fault, because it's the movements in the currency market that's unfolding here. As everything else has moved up, the dollar has moved down. And yesterday was really that was the trigger that finally saw gold take out some of the recent highs. And that was what we talked about yesterday. They really need to start breaking out some of these challenge some of these this scenario of lower highs. And that happened yesterday as we broke above 19.30. It's just stabilizing a bit this morning, also with the dollar stabilizing, because there's not really much input coming from the yield side. Obviously, as you mentioned, the nominal yields has seen quite a reversal this week, but for now it's not filtering through to lower real yields, because break evens, i.e. inflation expectations, has come down quite fast as well, as the reflation trade has deflated. But overall, both of you gentlemen talked about the collapse in yields, and that will continue to support the gold market. So while the equities are the Tina, there's also a small Tina when we look at the gold market, and that's where the support is coming from. Silver is doing a little bit of outperformance, but has yet to challenge that recent high at October 25.55. But overall, it looks like it is catching up some of what it lost since that August to October sell-off.
Yeah, and you mentioned the dollar, and that is key, because the flip side of all of this is the dollar, and that assumption of with gridlock in politics, you have the Fed on board, making sure everything's as liquid as possible. And you can see on slide four, you can see that Aussie dollar, the jump from around 70, zero spot 70. Ironically, of course, right on election day, prior to the election results, we had the Reserve Bank of Australia out cutting rates and doing its first major QE program. And then we have this explosion higher on after election day. So it's all the same trade. I think the key warning, or the headline warning, all of this is just be very aware of the degree to which your portfolio components may or may not be, most likely are, extremely correlated, and adjust risk accordingly. It's fun while it lasts, but then if everything reverses, it's all likely to reverse in sync. And we've talked a lot about dollar yen, and it has slipped below 104, but because we're seeing a general massive risk on, and we're seeing dollar weakness, the yen is doing its usual thing and sort of tracking the general direction of the dollar and the crosses. So while that is a major development, that the yen is crossing these levels, it's not generating a huge move in yen across the board. It feels to me like to see the yen really hitting its stride, you need to be looking at something like a weak risk sentiment and credit spreads blowing wider, not the opposite. So So it's a story, but yen isolated, the yen is not really a huge story outside of that. Let's briefly. We don't have a slide on this, but just want to highlight the severity of the COVID news. If bad is good, I guess the worse COVID gets, the better we should expect tech stocks and everything else to run higher. If you can't feel my note of sort of distaste for all of this, let me just express it explicitly. It's just a crazy world we have right now. But the COVID situation looking very bad in France. I don't understand how they're having record numbers, but they did have a record number of cases yesterday, despite having announced these curfews and severe lockdowns. And there was at least one story I believe I saw was 85% capacity in their ICUs. So if that reflects where COVID was three to 4 weeks ago, if that's the time it takes for a patient to get ill from the time they get ill to they're in the ICU, then I don't want to think about where this is headed. There's reports of the virulence being worse in cold weather. In the U.S., we had a record case count, and the election itself may have been a super spreading event in the U.S. So, and then finally, as if to make matters potentially even worse, we have here in Denmark, actually, one of the largest, believe it is the largest producer of mink. There are these large mink farms that got all of which in northern Jutland got where the populations of mink got COVID. And it somehow mutated into a new strain. And there are mutations within that that mutation of specific genes that may have to do with the effectiveness of some of these vaccine candidates. So they're extremely worried about that. And of course, this new strain has been found to be spreading in humans in Denmark as well. It's not a more dangerous version of the virus as far as they understand, but it is a mutated form that may or may not respond to vaccines. And they're doing a very severe lockdown of northern Jutland in Denmark. And we'll have to track that, whether that strain starts to spread within Denmark and beyond. And of course, anything that eventually shows up in these vaccine trials, if it is not addressed by that vaccine, this strain. So watching that story as well. Satan, guys, I need to come in and talk about, I guess, crude oil has been less of a story specifically over the last couple of days. It's kind of interesting that it's maybe one asset that's not super correlated with everything else at the moment.
Absolutely, John, because it's at the end of the day, it really is depending on the supply and demand. And right now, the worry is clearly that demand is once again on being challenged. I actually did put in a case count chart graph on slide 9. You can see that explosion we've seen in the U.S. And as you said, John, this is data from now. What is this going to look like in a week's time when the potential impact of all the of people being close together on the election day? So that's one we need to keep an eye on. But the market is clearly worried about fuel demand right now. So that means that the strong rally we had earlier in the week has faded, and we are still in a downtrend. And yes, as we cannot continue to, there's really only two things that can support the market right now. That's OPEC Plus by keeping production down, and the eventual emergence of a vaccine. And that's obviously still months away. So we're going to have potentially some troubled months here in the oil market still.
Right. Now, before I get to the macro calendar, Peter, did you want to talk about any of the earnings we've got coming in here today, or any wrap on anything that cropped up yesterday in earnings reports?
Well, yesterday we had earnings from Uber and Square, to name a few companies, and Square was blowout numbers. They beat expectations by 50 percentage points, so $3 billion in net revenue versus $2 billion expected. They're seeing a massive adoption of their digital payment service, so that's interesting. Uber was pretty much in line, but I'm laughing a little bit about Uber because they're sticking to their initial target of will become operating income profit or profitable before the end of 2021. With the current trajectory of the COVID-19, I think that will be a very tough target to reach. I think really there is a downside risk to Uber reaching its business targets here. But nevertheless, earnings have been extremely strong, as you can see on slide 6. I mean, we are way, way ahead of expectations before we went into the earnings season. We're actually almost back to where we were in Q4 last year. And it's driven a lot by extremely prudent cost discipline by companies. They've done it again. I mean, I think that's probably one of the major themes that we have seen develop among companies since the financial crisis, is their ability to control cost and be extremely aggressive when there is a slowdown in demand or there is uncertainty. We've seen it so many times before, and we're seeing this time again. Profitability is defended at all cost. Today, we've already had earnings from Toyota and Allianz, and Toyota spent a little bit of time attacking Tesla, saying they might beat us on the share price, but we actually have built 100 million cars. We know how to do this game. A little bit arrogant, and it is in sharp, in stark contrast to the recent comments from the CEO of Volkswagen, which basically just told their employees that they could end up being like Nokia if they don't get their acts together and move away from thinking only in hardware and industrial production, and also think about how to integrate software into the car. So it's I think Toyota is in a too arrogant position still, where Volkswagen, I think, have realized where the car industry is moving. But on a positive note with Toyota, they increased their operating income forecast for the fiscal year, which will end in on June 30th next year, to 1.3 trillion yen, up from 500 billion yen previously. So that's a big bump up there. And then Allianz here in Europe delivered a pretty good earnings release, to say the least. And otherwise, there's CVS Health in the US reporting today. Not a super interesting company. I think this weekend will be interesting with Berkshire Hathaway, and because of their large footprint as an industrial conglomerate across retailing and consumer goods, energy businesses, insurance, my banks, etc. I think it will be worth having a look at that, but we'll talk about that on Monday.
All right. Yeah, I think just for today specifically, I wonder how If just the election situation gives the market a little bit of pause after this blistering move since the early this week, especially if we go into the weekend without a declared winner, which would seem likely given Trump's behavior, but we'll see. For now, but though testing, this will be maybe one of the first tests of this bad is good hypothesis. We saw the ADP out rather weak this week, to say the least, very weak this week. On Wednesday, the October ADP payrolls change out of the U.S. We have the non-farm payrolls change today. And, if that misses or the other employment data misses, that could be one of the things to look at. But increasingly, if in general, there is a risk of the U.S. Economy losing momentum here without fresh stimulus. And that stimulus question and how much trust the market can put in the Fed to continue to boost this whole liquidity driven everything up scenario is, I think, one of the key themes that's going to be in play in coming weeks. But stay tuned for that data today and for the weekly close ahead of next week when the calendar eases off a bit. We have an RBNZ meeting next week. That one could be interesting. And the October CPI data out of the US is up on Thursday. But for now, we'll call it a day. Be careful out there, of course, as always. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.